And joining me in the KRVS studios this afternoon is Diana Stetko. She is a professor of English here at UL Lafayette, as well as the department head of the English department at the university. She is also the founder of the Milena Theater Group. And I think, Diana, you've been coming into our studios for interviews as long as the Milena Group has been around and producing plays, which was
17 years.
17 yeah. years. That's a yeah. that's a lovely number, 17.
Is it?
It is. Yeah. So before we talk about your latest production, which is called Revision, that will be performed Friday and Friday only in Griffin Hall Auditorium. I'd like to take you back just a bit to give us a little snapshot of the Milena Group's timeline and maybe give us a better sense of how you've come to this very unique production that we all hope to have the opportunity to see on Friday. So let's start off with the beginnings of the Milena Group and what were you hoping to do with that group?
I wanted, because I teach playwriting, because I write plays, I wanted to work with my students who, for the most part, are graduate students in English from the inside out. It's very difficult to explain theater to people who have not experienced it. So this all started with my need to find a place, a performance space, which can be pretty much any space, and show people the ability, what happens when you put silhouettes in a space, what happens when you play music and choreograph something, what happens when you bring an artist in and all of a sudden there is the image, there is the sound, there's the movement, there's the space. It's completely different from a fiction workshop or, you know, you don't just have the text. The text is the beginning. It's not the end result. And to explain the difference between that, the two-dimensionality of the page and the three-dimensionality of theater, that also happens to be a total art because every single other art goes into the making of a play, I started the Milena Group. And then it became a little selfish. I liked imagining things that I was constantly told, you can't do that on stage. And I would say, why not? Let's try it. So then I started experimenting with various concepts, art installations, memory plays, all kind of things. And then whatever I would learn, I would then teach. So the plays became my research. So that's the Milena Group. And surprisingly, shockingly, I've been managing to find people, and not with much difficulty, in the program because the English department seems to attract the strangest and most bewitching personalities. And they all end up on my stage.
Well, and it's been fascinating to see how some of these productions have developed around some of these personalities and characters that you all are both seeming, it's kind of a very symbiotic attraction.
It is. It is. I have to work, because my interest is not in making actors or anything like that. My interest is in working with the entire human being. So I usually ask people once they decide that they want to do this, so what do you do? What do you do very well that we can use in the play? For Revision, one of the answers was, I chop vegetables very fast and play the clarinet badly. And now both things have made it in the play. So it is. And I start with a skeleton text. And in rehearsals, so I end up with a complete text only at the end. But in rehearsals, I try to write the lines that I want to write with the people in mind. So I adapt to them as much as they adapt to me, which is what I can't ever explain. When people ask me why there's such an atmosphere when they enter and by the time they exit the play, it's there because I don't throw a text at them that they have to learn. The text grows with them and from their abilities.
Right. You mentioned earlier that you do this so you have a three-dimensional creation of your ideas, and it's not just having students look at the two-dimension. But I would say there are many people who have been to your productions who say it's more than three-dimensional. There's some other dimensions going on in
lovely.
There. So let's just quickly, without going into detail about every play, remind us of some of the titles of your plays and what some of the themes have been over the years.
The last ones were the trilogy, The Falling, which then came out from Yellow Flag Press as a book, and the plays of the trilogy were Noir, Glissando, or The Art of Cruelty, and the last one, which we did in 2015, was Q, a tragedy. And I noticed for the longest time that I focused on one rather unusual male character in all the plays. And whenever I notice that I do something habitually, I try to analyze it, see why I do it, and then I try to not do it in the next production and see what happens. And this is what happened with Revision. There are no men.
But there are mermaids.
But there are killer mermaids. Yes.
So. What if I'm sure some people are going to be mulling over what you just said about that, about you explore it, you analyze it, and then do not do that in the next one.
I do that because I tell people in playwriting workshops, whenever you find comfort, that's fine. You keep doing what you're doing well, but then try to place an obstruction before that. Try an obstacle. Try doing something that feels very uncomfortable, and then come back and do what you do habitually, and you will notice a change. The fear of stagnation in writing in theater is colossal. That's why you have people doing plays the way they were done 400 years ago, because there's no need for progress. And look at cinema. I mean, everything changes in cinema. Why shouldn't things change in theater, in writing? So part of the Milena Group's quest, since the last play was about Quixote, is to try without fear, even without fear of failure, because I wouldn't let people fail, but to try things that are not customary or are not the usual way of doing things, to see what happens if you don't do things the way you're told you should be doing them.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think people would say that you have successfully escaped stagnation. There's no one who's seen any of your productions over the years who would say that there's anything stagnating about your plays. Well, talk about your... because we keep using the word plays, but when I said there's more than three dimensions in your plays, you bring so many art forms to bear in your performances, your productions. Why is that so important to you, and what forms do you find yourself reaching for?
I think it's because the way I grew up, which in Revision is autobiographical, so I talk a lot about that. But the little town, Sibiu, in Transylvania, Romania, where I come from, was sort of a place where everything, every art form met in a very successful way. The Bruckenthal Museum, which is one of the oldest museums in Europe, was there. And it's what you did after school. You just went through the exhibits. The oldest press, we're talking like the late 1500s, was there. So there was this not just understanding, but seeing texts as art forms, seeing their connection with imagery, seeing how one can enhance the other. So one of the things that I grew up with was the inability to exclude one art form from the other because they are separate and have separate codes and separate symbols. I grew up knowing that theater assimilates everything, does not reject. And that's why the things I do, using cinematic techniques on stage, bringing artists to do my set, not set designers, bringing artists to suggest costumes, not costume designers all the time, that's where it comes from. It's possibly the only thing I'm still attached to from my past, the understanding that working together and using every single artistic field for what it can contribute to the stage is a benefit. It will never damage a play.
And I believe that you've added yet another art form this year, one that I don't think you've used significantly before, and that is film.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This for Revision – I finally worked with the Moving Image Arts program. And Revision is a play. Let's call it a play. I keep saying it's a play. That's not a play.
You'll have to come up with your own word.
Yeah. It's in three parts, and it's two-part film. So we start with a pre-show, and that's followed by a film, which is followed by the play part of the play, which is followed by a film, and then there's a coda on stage. So there's this constant – I was trying to imitate the movement of the waves, so things that move at a certain pace, and one medium is replaced with the other. And so at some point, that was my biggest fear, that there wouldn't be a seamless transition between the two, but there is.
Mm. You did mention that this is your most autobiographical play and maybe the only autobiographical production. You mentioned a few minutes ago that you are from Romania. You came to the United States and I believe got your PhD here.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then have chosen Louisiana finally as your home.
Yeah.
That plays into this production.
Yes, it does. I started to think about Revision because it's taken me a year to put this together. Because every time, you know how people are very nice here, but they also ask a lot of questions. And for 20-some years, to answer daily the questions, where are you from, do you like it here, and when are you going back? At some point, I reacted negatively to that, and it wasn't the people asking the questions. It was the place I was coming from. I didn't want to talk about it. I'm not from France. I'm not from Britain. I'm not from pretty places with serene people. So I realized that I had constructed this barrier between me and anybody who wanted to really know a few things about me. And I thought, okay, for once, I'm going to answer every question, and then we never talk about it again. So that's how.
Just try that in Louisiana.
Yep, I am trying it. So that's how Revision started. And then I started talking to somebody in the theater department here, Shannon Miller, who's the technical director there. And he asked the same questions. And for some strange reason, I started responding to these inquiries, not with the usual hostility, but with something that was almost like an explanation. And once the first story started, I couldn't stop. And all the stories that I never wanted to tell came out. And then I thought, well, why don't we put this in some sort of form? And the first form was that of a book, which is why this event on Friday, let's call it a play, is also accompanied by the book called Revision, a memory book, which is my conversations with Shannon that end with the entire text of the play and the film scripts. So I was very, very grateful to UL Press that they managed to produce the book in time to have it there for people to get at the end of the show if they're interested in the story and want it as a printed text. There it is. And also it comes with all the context.
So yet another art form that you are adding
to. And then I illuminated that text. Mm. I illustrated it because I doodle when I think. Mm-hmm. And I thought, mm-hmm. If this is what I do, why not? And then I just don't want – I'm afraid that I will forget if I don't mention it now – that I managed to put all of this together through a really generous grant, the Arts Park, from LIDA and the Acadiana Center for the Arts. They've sponsored a couple of my productions, and the Milena Group would not be what it is today. And this very complex project would not have happened without their help.
Good to remind us all of how important support for the arts is. So having had these conversations with Shannon, having answered endless questions or fielded or escaped from endless questions from people here, and finally having to face your journey and your decision to be here and live here, How did you start shaping that? It's one thing to have a conversation with someone. It's another to shape it into an art form.
That was the most difficult part. I realized I'm very reluctant to not filter reality, because reality, in my experience, is never pretty. So I always filter it through some sort of fantastical landscape, and that's how I managed it. The two films, one is called The Desert, one is called The Sea, tell the same story that is being told without a metaphor in the middle part, which is the actual autobiography, but with the help of the fantastical element through these landscapes. I keep seeing never-ending travels, hence the desert and the journey at sea. Perhaps all of this will only make sense for people seeing this, but the idea, and there's a sentence in the desert script, that once you leave home, it's not that you're lost or despondent, but you're always wandering. Mm. You're always a traveler. And then when you sit for a spell, and that spell may be 20 years, you still never quite feel settled. And then when I realized that I loved Louisiana and I wanted to stay here, when I realized that I found permanence in a landscape that's disappearing into the sea, that was, well, ironic first. And then I thought, well, isn't that just fitting? I mean, it's a journey into the sea. But I also experienced something that I'm talking about in the director's notes, something called solastalgia, which is like an existential crisis for a changing landscape, or in my case, a disappearing landscape. So it's this very odd feeling. You don't miss the place you're from because it's never really treated you kindly, but you're also never from here. Mm. So you always feel like you're in a journey of sorts. This is what revision is. It's a revision of the past. It's never the truth. Memory is a revision of the truth. And it's told within three landscapes, the desert, the stage, and the sea, that allow you to travel.
Well, you've explained those landscapes beautifully, and I think we're all going to inspect the landscapes where we live a little more carefully, having thought about that and especially seeing your play. But how did you shape the characters? Because these are not empty landscapes.
No.
You yourself are appearing for the first time.
Oh, yes.
In your play.
That was – I'll never do that again. But I needed – may sound strange, but I needed – me to tell my own story, not because I'm the only one who can, but I needed my accent. I couldn't have somebody without an accent telling the story of an expat. I also, doing research into the form of this, I had to sort of teach myself nonfiction to be able to see what my connection to the truth, to the past, how does one shape such a story? And so in the process of all that, I've noticed something else. People immigrating to the States are immigrants, and Americans living abroad are expats. It's a difference of vocabulary. And I thought, well, I don't want to be an immigrant. I want to be an expat. It sounds prettier. So I thought at that moment, that the word itself, expatria, you're out of country, mm-hmm. created a split. So then I realized that I could be me without, I'm not even on stage. I'm sort of to the side, tied to a writer's desk, reading, visibly reading from the book, from revision. But I split my character into me, writing and reading the story, and a fictional self. So that's how the first fictional self was created, of this woman traveling, constantly traveling through the desert. And she's played by Kimberly Ann Southwick, who's a graduate student in English. And then when I wrote the script for The Sea, I remembered a play that influenced me tremendously as a child. When I heard it, there was a lot of radio theater in Romania. I listened to radio productions. And it was Ibsen's Lady from the Sea. And there was something fantastical, but not really. Nothing fantastical happens in this play. It just has this atmosphere, and I wanted that. And I thought, recognize the fact that you can't tell a straight story, recognize the fact that you're afraid of pure autobiography and you need a fantastical element, and do something about it. And that's how The Killer Mermaid materialized. Because there's a line in the Ibsen play that says, "Here by the rocks in the foreground, a mermaid is to lie half dead." So I have constantly throughout the play the image of this mermaid who wears an 18th century bustle hoop skirt, almost like
with a
skeleton.
Tail.
But yes, it's almost like a mermaid exoskeleton. Mm-hmm. And she just lies there from time to time, noticing the landscape. So I have a connection with both women because one is supposed to be the actual me, a person with a past, a history, and a family. And the other one is the fantastical me. And once I recognized that I had these two sides, I was good. I could become a disembodied voice mm-hmm. at the edge of the stage mm-hmm. because the girls are beautiful and they can travel with an elegance that I do not possess but would like to talk about.
An internal elegance that you are always making visible to all of us when you create these productions. And I do want to tell people, before we continue, my guest is Diana Stetko, who is a professor of English here at UL Lafayette. She's also head of the department, the English department, and she is the founder and creator of the Milena Theater Group. This is the 17th year of the Milena Group, and she has finally created something that reveals that elegance in her personal elegance and that we will see on stage this Friday for one performance only at Griffin Hall in the auditorium. So who plays the mermaid?
The mermaid is played by another extraordinary, the people we gather in the English department, graduate student in English, Brooke Larson, who was a desert guide.
And now she plays a mermaid.
Mm-hmm. So the landscapes have changed, but there is something just in the experience of the people that I work with that allows them to understand, I think, poetic image. It is very easy to direct people who read books because we have a common vocabulary and I don't have to sit there for an hour explaining why slowing down motion against the landscape poetically creates an image that I need.
They jump eagerly into the sea of fiction.
I think for a long time, I felt the need to constantly explain what I do on stage. And at some point, I stopped because what I do on stage has to be beautiful because the landscape that I come from was not. And this is my cure. And if I treat actors like silhouettes, or I never treat them like puppets, but I do arrange their bodies and their walk, and their non-speaking moments are almost more important because their bodies signify a presence that I'm interested in. But I do that, and I have this colossal need for very beautiful things because I compensate for 30 years of ugliness, political, existential, sometimes at the level of the landscape. Mm-hmm. So I stopped justifying what I do.
Well, just 2 days before your play, your performance, your event, how are you feeling at the end of this journey? I mean, it's been nearly a year, beginning with your conversations, mm-hmm. Writing a book, gathering these characters. How are you feeling about presenting this work yourself, or how have your emotions been shaped and changed over the past year?
It's not comfortable. It's not comfortable at all. And I'm trying to not sound like a victim. I have never felt like a victim. I reject that concept. But the things that I talk about are rather dramatic. So that was a very difficult thing. So the way I dealt with that, I'm telling stories, maintaining my regular inflection, which is pretty calm. There's like no outbursts of emotion or anything. But it feels terribly uncomfortable because deep down inside, I still think this is only my business. Why do you want my memories? And do you want them? And then after doing that, I thought, oh my God, what if this is terribly boring because nobody cares about my past? So there's that. And that's the question that comes with every memoir. And if that's what I've learned from nonfiction. Mm-hmm.
Do you think if you had ended and made a home in another place, another state, you would have created this? And I ask that because you talk about how for 20 years, people have asked so many questions. People ask questions in Louisiana, and they particularly like to ask, who's your mama? That question that should open all the doors.
That's funny. Yeah.
Do you feel in part Louisiana has helped you open?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And that's actually not just Virgil Bedoc, who's the cinematographer and editor, and who's another expat who's helped me shape the image. So it was very easy talking to him about what I want because he understood that forlornness that I wanted. But Kanika still, being from Louisiana and understanding both where I come from and sort of translating the customs of the place and introducing me to the real Louisiana, she has been instrumental in the shaping of a piece. Not like in this past year. She has been instrumental in allowing me to discover the Louisiana that I now am forever tied to. Mm-hmm. I will never leave this place. Until of course, we're all under the sea. Yes.
But, and then you'll become a mermaid.
Yeah. So that's another thing that working with Virgil and Connie, you know, the expat and the local authority, because Connie knows everything that there is to know about Louisiana. And she's also a folklorist and she's a filmmaker. So just speaking of people's complementary fields and how we are all the sum of these professional reflections. And when we all meet, it's an extraordinary thing. And it is an event. And it has to do with the fact that I only want to do this for one single evening.
So we better be there, square, at 8 o'clock, right?
It starts 8 o'clock sharp. Friday. There is a pre-show. I can never just start the play. I think people still bring in their lives.
So come early, enjoy the pre-show.
Yeah, and the pre-show leads without interruption into the play. So at 8 o'clock, I'm closing the doors and that's it. Mm-hmm. So please be on
all
time.
Right. Or just, like you said, come a little early. Watch the pre-show. Because it is one production. There are filmed parts of this, but this is an experience that happens this one time only. But you do have the opportunity to get the UL Press publication of Revision,
A Revision, Memory Book. Will be there for sale. I feel like I'm selling my past to the highest bidder.
But finally, we know who Diana's mama is.
Right. Funnily, that should have been the tagline for this play. Unfortunately, the tagline for this play is, does this look like therapy to you? That's the tagline. But yes, it's the end of something. I don't like the word journey. It has become sort of cheap. Everybody is at the end of some journey. But this is the end of something. I'm not sure what it is. The way it manifests itself in the play is that the girls at some point obsessively sweep pages of manuscript off the stage and they fall off the stage and go. And it's, to me, it's symbolic. At the end, I've told everything. I've swept everything, tabula rasa. Mm. Now we begin again.
Yeah, well, circumnavigation of self.
That's a very good title.
Well, you know, you don't want to talk about the journey, and you always say that, you know, this is somehow the final, this is the culmination, this is a... And we've heard that for years, and we can only anticipate with eagerness and joy that the next production.
It's the end of autobiography. It's the end of that, definitely.
Well, you've ended other cycles before, haven't you?
Yes, I have. Yeah. And when I come back, it's always something different. And that's, you know, against stagnation.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to that, but now we look forward to Friday. Again, my guest, Diana Stetko, she is a writer, playwright. She is a professor of English and head of the department here at UL Lafayette, creator of the Milena Theater Group, 17 years of productions. She has written and directed Revision and created, along with Shannon Miller, the book Revision, A Memory Book, that will be available on Friday as well. 8 o'clock sharp, doors close, so you can come hour ahead and watch the pre-show.
Half an hour.
Watch the mermaid sliver across the stage, I guess. And we get to see Diana on stage this year. Yeah. Merci beaucoup, Diana.
Thank you.
Support for KRVS comes from Louisiana Connections Academy, a tuition-free online public charter school serving students grades K through 12 throughout Louisiana. Louisiana Connections Academy helps students maximize their potential and meet the highest performance standards through an individualized program of study. For enrollment information, the number is 1-800-382-6010. The website, louisianaconnectionsacademy.com.
Regional Public Radio for Acadiana. KRVS-FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
Support for KRVS comes from the Hilliard University Art Museum, presenting Pierre Bonnard, Landscapes from Le Canet. Selected works from the collection of the Musée Bonnard in France, opening May 27th. Located at 710 East St. Mary Boulevard, for information, the website is hilliardmuseum.org.